Democratic Republic of Congo. Maybe I should have turned left at Luxembourg. Say, what kind of place is this anyway? Games, prizes, food high and saturated fat? This place isn't kidding around. I am amused.
Thanks, Bugs, and welcome to We Talk Funny. I'm your host, Ken Pringle, and we've got some special amusement for you today, as we'll be talking with a man who has been the official voice of nearly every Looney Tunes character on the face of the Looney Planet, including Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and the whole rest of the gang. It's my buddy Eric Bauza. To celebrate, I'm enjoying a bowl of Trix cereal, not just because it's delicious, but because, well, let's just say that Bugs isn't the only rabbit that Eric has voiced. He's also played the voice of the Trix rabbit. Fun trivia fact, why is it even called Trix? The name may seem unusual until you find out that it originally premiered in 1954, not as its own cereal, but as a spin-off line. It was the tricky, sugar-sweetened version of Kix. I've got my Saturday morning treat. Grab your favorite bowl yourself, and as we always say here on the podcast, spoons up. Let's dig in. Welcome to We Talk Funny. I'm your host, Ken Pringle, and man, am I excited to bring you today's guest. I would have a hard time mentioning something that this guy hasn't appeared in. He is the voice of Fozzie from Muppet Babies. He's the Beagle voice from DuckTales. He's Woody Woodpecker, Puss in Boots, Luke Skywalker in the Lego Star Wars specials, Leonardo in TMNT, and he has been referred to as the modern-day Mel Blanc, as he is the voice of pretty much every Looney Tunes character you can name, including both Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, in the new Looney Tunes cartoon shorts on HBO Max. It's Eric Bauza, everybody. Thank you for coming on the show, Eric.
What's up, Ken?
Dude, I'm so excited to have you here. I've been wanting to get you on the show for a while. You know, I originally wanted to have you on the live show. We'd talked about that, doing some of the YouTube videos on there. I've been pushing you for years to get back into stand-up, you know.
Oh, man.
That's the kind of intro I could have given you on stage and given the audience way too big an expectation.
Well, yeah. But it's just right and perfect for voiceover. I feel like that's just the right amount. I appreciate you having me on the show. I appreciate you continuing to broadcast through these crazy times. It gives a lot of people some entertainment, something to listen to. And I'm honored. You've had some really outstanding guests in your past, and both on the live show and on your on this broadcast, and now that I'm a part of it, I'm super thankful, and thank you so much. It's for me, it's almost like a badge of honor. You know, again, you've talked to all the people that pretty much you and I grew up watching.
Yes, that is totally true.
Right? Yeah. And I feel like that is something that you know, now that I'm on the same show that they were on, I feel like I've leveled up. So thank you.
Yeah, every time I talk to one of those guys, like, I try to be professional about it, but inside I'm always trying to hide that 10-year-old giggle. I want to, like, ask a question. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I feel like that, you know, it's welcome. You know, because I also feel like they have to, at this point, feel the same way about the things that they've done in their career, like what they've been able to, you know, do or not even think that it was even possible. Cause I feel like a lot of people in the era before, are often, they come out here to Hollywood and try to make it as, you know, land that sitcom, you know,
right.
Be a stand up, be a musician, have a band. They still do those things, but then suddenly they find this, mystery career called voiceover, and especially in the 80s and 90s for animation, that was the time to be doing it. You know, I mean, I still obviously I'm doing pretty well, but like you just hear the stories and the legends, because there was no streaming, there was no 24-hour cartoon channel. It was like after school or Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only time you get to watch like these cartoon shows, and that was it.
And it was an even smaller industry then than it is now, in that it was so tightly knit. Like you pull up so many of those cartoons and it's the same cast over and over and over. You know, it's going to be Frank Welker in there. It's going to be Dawes Butler doing a bunch of it. You know, if it's 80s Nub, it's going to be Rob Paulsen on a bunch of them. You know, it's the same guys over and over on those casts.
But
so
it's
really impressive.
They're so iconic. Their voices are so iconic that you could only, you only want to hear, you know, someone like Maurice LaMarche or Rob Paulsen or Frank Welker, for that matter, to be in all four, you know, popular cartoon shows that were on at the time.
Oh, absolutely. And I do feel that, you know, as the next generation comes in and there's new people coming in, I mean, you are definitely up at the top of that list yourself. I mean, the work that you've done, I think it's incredible that you have the kind of career where somebody could come up to you on the street and say, man, I love your work. And they could be talking about nearly anything. You could just throw a dart at an IMDb chart and they're going to hit one of your shows.
Well, that's so nice of you to say. And, you know, it has happened. I have been in a non-Comic-Con environment where I have been recognized, which is amazing to me because I'm like, oh, okay. Even with the mask on. Maybe it's because I am wearing these outrageous Looney Tunes over, you know. I bought this, by the way. It's a pussyfoot hoodie.
It is nice.
From, of all places, Six Flags Magic Mountain.
You do have a pretty sick shirt game. I know that you posted a picture a few weeks back, I think it was, of you and Kevin Conroy together. And everyone else is like, oh, that's Kevin Conroy. My thought was, that is the most amazing Krusty the Clown shirt I've ever seen.
To be honest, it is a two-piece pajama set that I bought from... I was wearing a pajama top to LA Comic Con. And it was, hey, Krusty the Clown. You know, it was from a company in Canada called Cakeworthy. You should check them out.
I do know Cakeworthy. They just came out with a Roger Rabbit shirt that I was like, oh, I'm going to have to track this one down. It's really nice.
They have a ton of really, really great designs and really great licenses. I know we were chatting just before you hit record on this about, you know, the various outlets, Roosevelt's, Cakeworthy, various outlets to get these graphic tees. I am of the year and generation of, you know, when you wore a cartoon t-shirt, you were kind of like a nerd, you know. It wasn't cool. It didn't hit high fashion the way it has now, but I was the guy. Because, you know, I was out in L.A. when I first started my career doing an internship out here in L.A. And there was a store here that now, you know, it's been in Canada for years, a little store called Hot Topic. OK. And when I discovered this store, my mind was like blown. I was like, oh, my God, they have so much cool stuff in here. And I remember the first thing that I bought from Hot Topic. This was like 1999. It was like a Mighty Mouse t-shirt, and it was royal blue, like a royal blue t-shirt. And it was just Mighty Mouse doing his pose. And I was like, I need this in my life. And I bought one and I was like, my t-shirt collection is complete. Now I'm like, I lose
more girlfriends that way. Like having these t-shirts, I
don't have space for a relationship in my closet because there's no place for a partner to put their clothes anywhere in my house. I have too many. I'm thinking of like opening an Instagram where I'm going to start selling stuff like that. I have too much stuff. I have too much stuff.
And I'm the same way. I literally just bought new hangers. Not because I wanted higher quality hangers, but because I was like, these are thin. I can get more space in the closet. I can fit more shirts in there. Hot Topic, that was like back in the day, you know, when we were like in high school, like it was, I couldn't go to the mall without a visit to Hot Topic and a visit to Suncoast because that was the other place you would find some of that back when that was a thing.
Well, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, like, you know, I still buy I know everything's streaming now and downloadable, but I still buy tangible Blu-rays and 4K DVDs, you know, I still have to have it like, you know, again, streaming, you can just turn it on. It's there. You don't have to pop anything in. It's convenient. But sometimes there are just some things that I'm just like, I just need to own that thing.
The bookshelf was like, it was like putting yourself up on the wall and being like, if it's on this shelf, it represents me. I mean, I remember seeking out all of the, probably 15 years ago, the Hanna-Barbera DVD sets where they would do all the different 60s and 70s shows.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they didn't sell well, so they dumped a bunch of them at Big Lots. and I would hunt down like every Big Lots I could find in Southern California, tracking down the more obscure ones.
And this is the complete series of like
the
Jetsons.
Yeah, it would be like the complete series of Wacky Races, or it'd be like every season of Flintstones and the Adventures of Penelope Pit Stop. Yeah,
it would have that really nice plastic box over it, right?
Yeah, it looks really good. Those are great. Yeah, those were fantastic. And talking about the shirts, I do want to mention that you've gotten into this game not just as a consumer, but you're also you're doing something really cool with RetroKid, which I find fascinating because, you know, you've really focused on something that I feel is underserved with a lot of the classic Canadian kids shows. Being from Canada yourself, I grew up in Alaska, so I would get some of that Canadian programming. I was so excited when I saw that you had a shirt for the Raccoons.
Oh, my God.
Because Bert Raccoon, that's my boy right there.
Oh, my God. Like, well, please, you're going to have to send me your preferred hoodie size and your shipping address, because I'll send you all of our Raccoon stuff. RetroKid is an idea that myself and a friend of mine, Steve, from high school, we were the best buds in high school. We had a group of friends, not just me and Steve, but like four or five of us. We would just like every weekend order pizza. I can't even tell you how many times we must have rented and watched the movie Bloodsport over and over again with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like it's that small group of goofy friends that, you know, we didn't get into trouble. We just we goofed around at home and just had the same sense of humor. And, you know, again, I was that guy who would often visit LA or I would be working in LA and then I would come back to Toronto and I would have these cool shirts and they'd be like, man, this is, you know, and then I would get them stuff for Christmas every time when I finally made the move here. But I was always that guy that always had the graphic tees, and then everyone started to slowly, now suddenly again, like, you're wearing this amazing shirt, I have this hoodie on. Everyone that loves pop culture or animation or, you know, and again, pop culture meaning like TV, movies, cartoons, you know, all that stuff. If you don't have this cool shirt and, you know, you walk into a room and you do have these items on, it's a topic of conversation starter, you know, like people like identify and go, oh my God. So, you know, when we created RetroKid, we're kind of like, we obviously love graphic tees. We both have different styles, but we do like the same content. So in that sense already, there's two different, like, okay, we could do very subtle stuff or we could do very like loud stuff. I'm obviously of the loud.
Same here, man.
You know, you walk into a bar with this and people like will be like, what the, you know, people like, what? Number one, why are you wearing that? You're a grown man, but where can I get it?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, huh? Well, yeah, well, it's kind of cool. So for RetroKid, we're like, man, everywhere you go online, whether it be the mall, you know, a kiosk, everyone's selling graphic tees. Everyone's now in the graphic tee game. Whether it's fully licensed or bootlegged, you're selling shirts. So we were like, how are we going to stand out? What are we going to focus on that's going to make us a little bit different than everyone else? And we were like, Canadian nostalgia. Because like, even though, you know, we grew up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, that is basically like, you know, New York's ugly step cousin from the north. We're very small, much smaller, but still a big city, still very much a big melting pot of cultures and a variety of people.
And the best way I've ever heard it described was on an episode of 30 Rock where Steve Martin is trying to get Tina Fey to move to Toronto. And he described Toronto as, he says, you're going to love it. It's just like New York, but without all the culture. Yeah.
That's so funny and so true, but more funny than true. Like there's death. Oh my gosh. Now I have to find that episode. But yeah, we were like, what are we going to celebrate? How are we going to stick out? And we thought Canadian pop culture, Canadian TV shows that we grew up watching, and brands, and just little inside jokes and things that maybe a very, very select few would find funny. But again, you know, look, I live in LA now. So when I walk down the street wearing a Raccoon shirt or a Mr. Dress-Up shirt, Mr. Dress-Up was our Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
And another Canadian sees that. That's like, oh, hey, how's it going, eh? You know, from across the street. Like, it's like oh, you're not alone. You know, it's like, oh. So we started doing that, and it's only been 3 years. And I feel like we're, you know, even with like, we just released last October, a Beetlejuice, the animated series collection. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, well, that's not Canadian, but it, but we're like, it was produced in Toronto. Like the voice actors, Tara Strong was on there. She played like the villain, the bad girl on the show, Lydia's nemesis. And the whole show was produced in Toronto, like as far as animation is concerned. So like we're desperately trying to find all those weird Canadian angles. Like the next one I want to do is a Police Academy collection.
Well, are you talking the movies or are you talking about the animated series?
Well, see, there's the animated series.
Really obscure.
Who wouldn't want an animated Tackleberry t-shirt?
Absolutely.
I love that
you mentioned this because this, you know, this does bring up an interesting angle in that I feel like a lot of Americans aren't necessarily familiar with some of the stuff that's coming out of Canada as Canadian. Like
right.
There's certain shows that, I mean, The Raccoons, for example, you know, it didn't air, you know, at a good time, but it did air on the Disney Channel in the U.S. You know, over at Roosevelt's, you know, I'm a member of the Roosevelt's Insiders, which is the fan group there, and they do a lot of Nickelodeon shows. And one of the shows that would get requested a lot is You Can't Do That on Television. And I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That wasn't Nick. Nick did air that, but that was a Canadian show.
Yeah.
You know,
Degrassi, it's great that you're high.
Yeah, you're presenting this opportunity to sort of educate an American audience that grew up with these shows that, you know, there's more outside the Continental 48 that's going on here, and we've affected you in ways that you didn't even realize.
I know, and again, it's always a surprise to me when I hear someone like you said, you grew up in Alaska, and I'm like, well, what did you get? And then you're like, raccoons. It makes me laugh because I'm like, man, so I wonder what else escaped from our... from our little corner of the universe.
Oh, man, you mentioned Bloodsport, and it's like I grew up watching Bloodsport so much. In fact, just the other night, my wife and I were talking about an argument or something, and I just start walking around the house going, Kumite, Kumite, and she has no idea what I'm referencing.
Oh, my God. Well, believe me, sir, I'm going to hook you up with, we made this Bloodsport hoodie. It has the logo going down the sleeve, but we made an official, like a Kumite, it's embroidered, it's a patch that has been sewn onto the hoodie, but it's like as if like you were like if you were in an actual Kumite, they go, sign here, sign this waiver, here's your hoodie, you know, like this is your complimentary hoodie for joining the Kumite. So I'm gonna send you one of those. You're gonna love it.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, it's funny. I was just telling somebody the other day, you know, I'm a big Fortnite player, and Fortnite, they do all these actions that you can make your player do that reference different things. And I always said that, you know, they've got, you know, you the bat signal in there and things like that. I always said the one that I wanted to see them do was the slit throat from Bloodsport.
Oh yeah.
Because it would be so iconic.
The You Are Next bolo. We have a bolo shirt. I had a friend of mine draw Bolo in kind of like a Capcom Street Fighter kind of style.
Oh, and sweet.
It's actually, you would love it. And again, it's such an obscure thing that, you know, we are sitting on a big stock of that stuff still. So if you know a friend that loves Bloodsport, I'll send you the link and maybe you could be our biggest, we'll give you a cut. You could help us be the biggest promoter of Bloodsport clothes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure we'll get that linked in the social media for this, and suddenly you're going to see a surge of Bloodsport merchandise going out.
Please.
So one of the questions I do want to ask you, because I mean, obviously I know the answer to this, but I ask it traditionally of every guest anyway. Saturday mornings, what were your Saturday mornings like? Obviously, you were a Saturday morning cartoon kid.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
describe
indeed.
That for me. What did you watch? What was your favorite?
Well, for me, it was getting up at the crack of dawn before anyone else so I could have control of the TV. You know, pouring myself a big bowl of honeycomb cereal, which is probably, you know, that was like that put more holes in my teeth than anything else.
Which, you know, I was going to ask you favorite cereal as well. And I should point out that as you have voiced both the Trix Rabbit and Lucky from Lucky Charms, you might be contractually obligated to change that answer.
Yeah. If you know, the funny part about Lucky, you know, they're like, we want a younger Lucky. So not like the old like leprechaun guy that you remember. So I was like, well, you know, well, do you still want the leprechaun kind of like the touch of the Irish in there? And they're like, let's play around with it. So we started out like here, you know, he was much younger and you know, they're after me Lucky Charms. And they're like, a little less. I'm like, they're after me Lucky Charms. And they're like, a little less. And I'm like, they're after me Lucky Charms. They're like, perfect. And I'm like, he's not even anything remotely. And they're like, perfect. So it ended up being more Like, and if you look at that commercial, I mean, John DiMaggio is in it. Pete Browngart, you know, the voice of Uncle Grandpa.
Yeah.
Who else was in it? Tom Kenny, I believe, shared his vocals on that. It ended up being more of like a shout out or a callback to Adventure Time than anything else. It didn't even really look. It looked like a Cartoon Network commercial. And yeah. That was at the time, like, regular show was still on TV. And, you know, it was just such a bizarre situation. And the Trix one was a little bit more traditional, still a little bit modernized. But what I did walk away with, though, was, you know, of course, the honor of voicing those iconic cereal commercial mascots. But they did release limited edition cereal, like, it was on the shelves at Target, like the character design of Lucky that I did and the character design of the Trix Rabbit that I did got their own boxes.
Oh, wow.
So I have to take an X-Acto knife and make them frameable and get them framed at the, you know, I go to Fast Frame on.
Been there many times.
You know, the one, I think it's close to Fulton and Ventura.
Oh, that one. I would go to the one down on Beverly. So.
Oh, nice. 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 Yep. I go to that one and the guy's like, oh boy, here we go. Like, he knows everything in my house. Like, I have too much. Again, this episode specifically should be called Eric Has Too Much Shit in His House. Because it's not just clothes, Ken. You know, like cereal boxes. Wait till we talk about animation cells and which ones I have. But for me, my Saturday mornings were a big bowl of honeycomb. Still in my PJs. Thundercats, Silverhawks. Man, oh man, the real Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles.
So you broke my heart right there because I don't think I've ever talked about this on the show because it was being kept secret, but now it's a couple years in the past. I guess it's okay. One of the We Talk Funny shows we were going to do live that ended up not happening was we were going to do a reunion of the cast for Real Ghostbusters.
Oh, and man.
Well, what blew me away was that Frank wanted to do it, and Frank never does anything.
No,
and I was like,
doesn't.
I don't care. We'll schedule this at midnight. I don't care when it is. Whenever Frank's available, that's going to happen.
Wow.
And Frank was in. Mo was in, Dave Coulier was in. The only person that wasn't available and why we ended up postponing it was Arsenio Hall,
wow.
Which makes me laugh because Arsenio was at the club like every weekend.
What?
He just did not happen to be available this particular week.
Oh my God.
And so we're like, we'll do it later. And then, of course, the world caught fire. So
they ended up, I remember, because I'm such a huge Ghostbusters nerd, I ended up going to the Ghostbusters Fest that happened. It was like I Ghostbusters Con or whatever you want to call it. It was the official kind of convention made just for Ghostbusters fans on the Sony lot.
Yes, yeah, I remember. That was like a few years ago.
Did you go? Did you end
up going?
No,
I heard about it. I think Brock Powell went.
Yeah, I went with Brock.
Oh, you went with Brock. Okay. Yeah, I heard it was incredible.
It was me, Brock. I took his picture with, you know, we were about to leave. We were there the whole day. I had my son with me. And at that point, he was only like almost four. So he was like 3.5, 4 years old. And, you know, the fact that he was able to even last that long. And it was hot that day. You know, we had ice cream and all that stuff. And we were like, we got to go. I got to go. And he's like, okay, I'll go. And we were all three of us leaving. And then we saw this. They had like a big blow up, you know, life-size blow-up stand of the Real Ghostbusters toy packaging. So it looks like if you stood in front of it, you look like the action figure.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was like a photo opportunity for you to stand in front of the packaging life-size. So you were like the size of the action figure. So we were taking goofy pictures around that. And I hear like this mob of people about, you know, walking down this, like, you know, it's the studio lot. So
sure, sure.
It's the you know, the little pathway where cars and little golf carts could walk through. And the firehouse was right around the corner from where we were. You know, Ecto was right there. And Ray Parker Jr. had just finished playing like a 20-minute long version of the Ghostbusters theme. And we're like, well, what's all the hubbub, bub? And, there he was Ernie Hudson just walking down like this small path with like, it was like that scene in Austin Powers where he had the marching band behind him and like, like all of England was behind him. And I was like, oh my God, it's Winston. So it's Ernie, it's Mr. Hudson. So He starts walking and he's about to turn because I think he was about to join Dan Aykroyd on stage and Ivan Reitman and Jason Reitman. Except he stops and he sees my son. He sees Riker, and Riker, of course, we're going to Ghostbusters Con. You're going to wear a Ghostbusters shirt today.
Sure.
And my son loves Ghostbusters. So even at 3.5, 4 years old, he was like, maybe there's, I fast forwarded through the scary stuff, but, I was like, you know, he loves the idea. He loves Ecto-1. It's his favorite picture car. And, you know, Ernie stops and walks over to Riker and just has this moment with him, with my son. And I'm just standing there and I'm like, pull up my phone and I start taking pictures. I always post the pictures every year, once a year. And it is the best exchange. He gave him a high five. And it's what's funny about the photo is not just, you know, Ernie Hudson and my son hanging out and talking and high-fiving. It's these two fangirls in the back that are like, it looks like they're crying and going, oh my God, it's so cute. Like they were, look, if I post, I'll send you the pictures. You will laugh. Cause again, just look at the background.
Yeah.
The attraction and the people that were just around just to see this little moment between Ernie Hudson and this tiny, and Ernie's like, he probably, the guy's bicep, like he just looks like he works out every day.
Yeah.
Like at the age that he's at, I feel awful. I'm like 42 and I'm like, I make noise when I put my seatbelt on in the car. And here's Ernie with his like giant ripping biceps, like, you know, like,
he's awesome. I told Brock, going back to Roosevelt's actually, they did some Ghostbusters shirts that are amazing. Yeah. And they had this one that had art of the four Ghostbusters on it with different iconography from the movie. And during the pandemic, especially during the early days, they actually produced a bunch of masks that they were giving away for free of a lot of the different artwork from their different shirts. And one of them used the artwork from that Ghostbusters shirt. I ordered a bunch of them because, you know, you'd get a random piece of the fabric that became the mask. And everyone wanted one that had like Venkman on it or something. I kept going until I found one that had Winston front and center. Cause I was like, Winston doesn't get the love he deserves. I don't want another Venkman mask. I want a Winston mask.
That makes me think, like, instead of Arsenio, you should have asked Ernie Hudson if he was available.
To just fill in.
Because apparently the legend is that he did audition for the show. Did
really?
He not? Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Can you imagine? Like, we should do the research and
that's hilarious.
Get that legitimized. But from what I heard that he actually, like, read for it, and they're like, oh, well, we're going to go with Arsenio.
That's hilarious.
Maybe they were, like, too worried that, you know. Even at that point, like, the idea of having a celebrity do a cartoon voice was not even, like, a thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, celebrity in a Saturday morning cartoon? Unheard
of.
That's
crazy talk. Yeah, yeah. Nobody puts celebrities in cartoons.
Stand-up comics, maybe. But certified celebrities, no.
Now, you mentioned your kid, and I do have to ask, because, you know, you and I are about the same age. My kid's a year younger than yours is. He's actually turning 4 here in about 2 months.
Nice.
But because, you know, you've done so much work, have you had that experience of your kid watching things that you've voiced?
He was here. The latest one is the latest experience was I disallowed him to watch YouTube now because he started. It's funny because as he grew in like the last 2 years on YouTube, so have like the YouTube families that he has kind of adopted and started watching. But they've also started kind of like their kids on the YouTube channel started getting older and wilder and started becoming more loud and less educational and more goofy.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's start watching like real shows. Like, you know, I would let him watch like real shows like, you know, Peppa Pig and all that stuff. But, you know, he, for some odd reason, just being in control on YouTube, he liked that a bit more. So we stopped watching YouTube and started watching more of just like Netflix, because I knew that whatever was on Netflix is a guaranteed like 11 minutes. He won't be channel surfing. His attention span.
Oh, yeah. My kid's 3 and he already knows how to find the Netflix button on the Roku remote. It's amazing.
Well, there you go. You know what I mean? I'm sure he could skip ads on YouTube as well. So or like, comment and subscribe. But it's definitely like he's now hooked on Netflix, and he likes the longer stories and he likes the shows. One of them was Fast and the Furious, the new animated.
Oh, like, really? Yeah, wow, that's a pretty serious one for a kid his age.
I mean, there's no violence, there's no guns, no one gets hurt per se.
There's some serious dialogue going on there. Like it's dialogue intense. It's an interesting choice.
It's a bit more maybe in the tween kind of like realm.
Yeah.
But again, it's animated DreamWorks Fast and the Furious. So it's not they're not, you know, there's no crime. You know, I can't really say that there's heavy crime on the show, but there's racing maybe where there shouldn't be, like illegal street racing. But my son loves race cars. But I was in the kitchen preparing his lunch for school the next day, and he was watching it and he pauses it. I hear the TV stop. He's like, "Dad, is this you?" And then he rewinds it, and I walk into the living room, and he plays it. And it's this secret agent that sounds like a German guy, like a very German kind of accent. And I'm like, yeah, that is me. Like, and I forgot that I did this episode of Fast and the. It was like a one-off character, but they wanted him to have this goofy German accent, and I was like, I did it. But the fact that he was able to. Maybe it's just my bad acting that he was like, he's like, that sounds like my dad, my goofy father in an episode. But he was able to pinpoint it. He knows the difference between Mel Blanc Bugs Bunny and Eric Bauza Bugs Bunny.
That's awesome.
And definitely when we're at the schoolyard and, you know, the kids are playing and all the parents are on their phones on the park bench. He's the one that's like, "Hey, Dad, come over here. Do the voice. Okay, now go away. Like he's like my little pimp, you know, like he'll just slap me in the face and then I do the voice and then I go cry behind the dumpster. But yeah, he's pretty incredible when it comes to his ear.
Really?
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, you know, in voiceover or something in the arts.
Wouldn't be the first. It seems like a lot of there's a lot of folks out there. I had Dino Andrade on the show a few episodes back, and we were talking about the fact that his kid Connor is doing more than he is at this point. Connor's in everything, and it's like, you know, Carlos Alazraki's daughter is doing a lot of work now. She's on Star Trek Prodigy, and just got more and more of a new generation coming out that this is the norm for them. That's what you do.
I think at one point, Gray Delisle and her son, Tex, were on Loud House together.
Yeah, Tex is an amazingly talented kid in his own right with his art. I mean, I think Tex could do pretty much anything he wants. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for
I'm a big fan. That's awesome. My kid, not so much yet, because he's still at that age where he gets very obsessed with specific shows, and for 3 weeks it'll be the same show over and over. Like if I introduced him to your work, he wouldn't care about any of it other than the fact that you're Jake the Cupcake from Ask the Storybots. That's the only one. He'd be like, "It's Jake." Yeah, of course.
I remember that. Man, oh man. I think that when I was in the booth for that over at their old studio over at Jib Jab, yeah, it was like, man, it was like working in a sauna. I was so hot. I was like, "Can we open a door or a window? It's getting hot in here." I Tadashore it all over these headphones. That's my my Fred Tadashore reference. Fred likes to work up a sweat, that guy.
Now, going back to when you first started, one of the things I find interesting about your career is that you did not originally get into animation as a voice actor. You originally started as an animator. You were coming out and doing layout and character design.
Yeah, I was doing that at over.
How did one lead to the other?
6 Point Harness was the last studio that I worked at where I was doing character layout, and it was like shows like you know, that studio produced like Wawa Wubsy. They produced tons of, you know, Adult Swim content, commercials for Cartoon Network. Like I remember working on a commercial for Class of 3000, like Andre 3000's cartoon show.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
I remember Where My Dog's At, which was a very short lived Jeff Ross, you know, Jeff Ross, the Roastmaster General. If you like stand up, and, you know, people that get made fun of, Jeff Ross, he and Tracy Morgan played these two dogs. And that was my first exposure to John DiMaggio and Charlie Adler. Because they would come to the studio and do the table reads there, and then they would leave. Jeff Richards, also former SNL cast member, did voices on
that show.
Yeah. Great impressionist. And I was there drawing at that studio, and every now and then a project would come through. whether it be internal or someone had a pitch, and they would always ask, like, hey, we know that you love to do voices. I was always the troublemaker that would not be at his desk. I would just be running around the studio making people laugh. And I was surprised that I was never fired. But I'm very fireable. But they were like, we know that you love voices and all this stuff. And would you like to do scratch dialogue? Mm-hmm. Would you like to do temporary dialogue? And I'm like, yeah, like just to be in the booth and just to, here, read this, you know, like we need a temp voice for this. Like people like Duncan Trussell, like stand-up comics like Duncan Trussell would come in with a project.
Yeah.
Just random people and very famous people. And I would do the voice. Sometimes it would, you know, go further and other times they would pass. But the one time that it finally stuck was a show called El Tigre, The Adventures of Manny Rivera, created by Jorge Gutierrez and Sandra Ikiwa. It was picked up by Nickelodeon. And they're like, okay, we know Carlos Ellis-Rocky. We know Alana Ubach. We know Gray. Who's this Eric guy? And why aren't we using Tom Kenny instead of him? You know, and like, we have so many people here. Why are you going to hire this serial killer from Canada? Is he crazy? Do we know? And this was 2006. And Jorge was just like, we have to have him. He's great. Like, I love it. This is all I hear. And the voice that I was doing for the character, the character's name is White Pantera. White Pantera. He was basically my impression of Ricardo Montalban. Tattoo, please bring these guest bags to the room. It was rich Corinthian leather. And they tried to audition against my read, and they're just like, okay, fine. He's in. they gave me a work visa and I got into SAG and I was on El Tigre, like this show. And I was like,
it's amazing.
Ah, I could quit my job now as an animator. This show will be on for 30 years. And then a year and a half later, canceled. I was like, now I got to go crawling back, you know, like Homer crawls back through like the little tiny door in Mr. Burns's office. Like,
well, I see who's come crawling back.
Oh, Mr. Burns, can I do character layout again? Yeah. So it was like I had to go back to my job as an animator. And it was that weird, like 50-50 balance. There was a show, the last show that I worked on, where I finally just, and I didn't even have any leads as a voice actor. I just had to quit because I knew that if I stayed in animation, I would never be a voiceover artist. And I needed that pressure of not having a safety net mm-hmm. to push forward and succeed. The last show that I worked on was a show called Good Vibes that starred Jake Busey and Josh Gad. And it was a show about surfing. And it was a show that was on MTV that was paired with the return of Beavis and Butthead. So that was like the last thing that I worked on. And then I quit because I was like, I just have to concentrate on being a voice actor. And not having a job is going to make me have to get a job in voiceover.
Right, right. And I do think that happens to a lot of people in the entertainment industry that, you know, if you have some modicum of success, you will reach a point where you have to take that jump, to, you know, take that leap. I know I did it with stand-up comedy. I was working for Earthlink back when they were a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was the night guy at Earthlink answering emails and starting to work the road, and I'd skipped as much work as I possibly could
sure.
and had no vacation days left, and they're getting pretty pissed at me. And I told my roommate, I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to quit my job. And he goes, really? And I was like, yeah, I think I got to focus on being a stand-up full-time. And he's like, well, how are you going to pay the rent? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, 2 weeks after that, I booked a Super Bowl commercial and I was fine for like 6 months.
Oh,
but
my God.
I got lucky, you know?
That's
but
the
yeah,
dream.
You do reach that point where it's like, man, you know, it's hard to know when that point comes, but you know when you get there that you have to dive in and just hope for the best. So it's yeah. awesome that you were able to recognize that and do it.
But yeah, it was like one of those things. And I think the next one after that was like Fairly Odd Parents. I played a character named Foop because Butch Hartman was, you know, anytime they pitched that character, you know, he almost ended up being like it was an evil baby. And guess who was the evil baby at that time? It was Stewie, right? Like, and he worked with Seth MacFarlane on Johnny Bravo. Both Butch Hartman and Seth MacFarlane worked at Hanna-Barbera on Johnny Bravo before it switched to Cartoon Network. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can't even imagine that if you are going to pitch an evil fairy baby, you know, character, that it's going to sound like Stewie, no matter what you do.
So what I ended up doing was like a very, for Foop, it was more, I stole directly from, if you're going to steal from the best, I stole from Jiminy Glick, Martin Short's character.
You know, where he would talk really high and then get very low.
So if you watch Fairly Odd Parents, if you just type in Foop, just listen and go, oh my God, it's just Jiminy Glick that he's doing.
Like, Timmy Turner, I think I'm going to get you, Timmy.
Like, it was kind of like that. And I was like, that doesn't sound like Stewie at all. And it's still an evil fairy baby, but I'm stealing from Jiminy Glick. And no
that's
one will
fantastic.
Know.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think that a lot of voice actors, when they first get into this business, don't realize how much... how much you pull references from other things that you've heard other places and kind of make them your own. And you knowing how you're controlling that can be really, really useful in the booth, and knowing, okay, I can put this much of it in, but not too much of it in. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's super funny. And, you know, another weird thing that I did on, speaking of just like pulling from, this is an exact direct reference, was on Turbo Fast, which was the animated
DreamWorks show. Yeah.
The first original Netflix animated series, which was based off of Ryan Reynolds' movie. The brother in that film was played by Paul Giamatti. And, you know, they had Reed Scott from Veep as the kind of Ryan Reynolds kind of voice match. They had Maya Rudolph's voice match was done by Gray, Snoop Dogg, Phil Lamar. They had there's a Samuel Jackson character on there, and then there was also Paul Giamatti. And it's like, where do you even start with Paul Giamatti? It's such a, he definitely has a distinct voice, right?
He does, I mean, but it's hard to find the hook. Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole thing about him was, you know, just watching all of his interviews, he gets a little like very subdued, but then he start, you know, Howard Stern is the Antichrist. And, look at this guy, Robin. He's like a pig vomit. He looks like a pig and makes me want to vomit, you know.
Watching, WNBC.
WNBC. And get, you know, a Turbo, you better get down from there. It's very dangerous. It's that weird, you know, it's almost like you have to try to pretend like you're trying to bite your own shoulder. Like your mouth. It's like Popeye, like the Popeye character design. It's a guy, his mouth, my face is here, but my mouth is all the way down here. So that's basically, you know, I was like, that's the weird. And Andrea Romano.
I've never wished that this was a video podcast more, because watching the contortions in your booth while you're trying to do that.
This is my rubber room. This is why I don't go to a therapist, is because I get to come in here and bounce around for a few hours. Oh boy.
Now this does lead into something I wanted to ask you about, because I mean, this is one of the things that you are phenomenally good at, that you're very well known for, is being able to perfectly recreate the voice work behind some classic characters and things like that, and make them your own. That, you know, if you look at a character like Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck or something like that, there's guys out there who can impersonate those characters, and you hear them, you're like, oh, that's a good Bugs Bunny impression, but you are Bugs Bunny. You are Daffy Duck. You really embody the character. How do you go about breaking down a voice and being able to replicate that and make it your own?
Well, Mr. Pringle, I'm glad you asked. You know, here's the thing. Daffy Duck is the real star of Looney Tunes. And I was going to say, when are we going to have Eric stop talking? Because no one wants to hear that voice. They lined up and waited in queue online for this voice.
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, geez, Mel Blanc is, geez Louise, we could have an entire 6-episode special on that guy and just profiling his life. And I mean, just think about it. Like, and even on the art side of Looney Tunes, like, we in modern times reference Looney Tunes to get inspired to create new things. Right. What the hell were they looking at in the 90s? What were they smoking? What were they doing? They were like burning garbage in their backyard here in California at the time. That's what they thought was good for the world. It's like, how do we get rid of all this garbage? Well, let's burn it. Let's burn it in our backyards. Nothing bad will happen.
Animation sells in turpentine. Throw them on the fire. No problem.
This lights up really well. What is that? Plastic. Yeah. But what were they referencing? What were they looking at? What really fueled Mel Blanc to have the ability to... He created these characters, too. That's the other thing. It's not even like he was doing an impression. It's like I have like 30, 40 years of Mel Blanc's work, and then I have another 40 years of like Joe Alasky, Greg Burson, Jeff Bergman, like all the other great Bugs Bunnies in the wake of Mel Blanc. So like I have a lot of cheat notes and a lot of reference that I look at. But yeah, for me, what I love most about Mel Blanc and what he did specifically with Bugs were those weird moments where he kind of lost control of the voice and was a little bit more unhinged, like,
oh, hi there, little fella. You know, when he was helping Playboy Penguin get back to South Pole. It was the South Pole? Ooh, I'm dying! You know, like,
that's the stuff for me where it's like, you know, in all the years past Mel Blanc, I've never heard anyone get so comfortable with trying that. And for me, that's the kind of stuff that I miss from Bugs, is the stuff where it's not Bugs, where it's like, oh, ooh, ooh, like that weird,
It's very far out of the range, and you rely more on the character to push the voice than the vocal quality to push the voice.
Yeah, because I feel like you could be such a good impressionist that you get kind of trapped in this box, and you're kind of like, well, I found what works. You know, again, what was so wild about Mel was his ability to just go out of those comfort zones go out of that zone that made that character even more real and more like you could just hear the sweat like dripping off of him when he's like in his 4-piece wool suit smoking a cigarette indoors in a Warner Brothers like warehouse, you know, when he's doing Yosemite Sam, because like that. I always draw the line from Mel Blanc being like the equivalent of human bagpipes, where he's just pressing air out of himself, like, you know, like he's got all this hot air inside of him and he's just like pushing himself. Because when I was in a session with Fred Tatasciore and he was doing Yosemite Sam and I was doing Bugs Bunny. And we're just there like, gosh, you know, for 4 hours.
You know, doing this voice.
And Fred's doing this voice, you know, like that. Ooh, that rabbit. And we're just like, the beads of sweat are starting. Like, I finally started sweating, but Fred was already like wringing out his ponytail, you know, like a wet towel at a water park. And I'm like, this is hard, right? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I go, hey. When you do Yosemite, do you stop breathing? Because I stop breathing when I do Bugs.
like I it's almost like I'm pushing it all out, Doc.
And I think about and I listen, and like I started watching like Looney Tunes again. There was a time at the beginning of the production of Looney Tunes cartoons where I was watching 1 to 2 hours every day, but I had to stop because I was like, it's too much. But I started watching it again, and I'm like, man, he just sounds so free with those voices, like he is breathing. But it's that weird thing as an impressionist, and I know you have a ton of impressions in you. I'm going to ask you, like, the next time you bust into, like, an impression that you do, like, do you stop breathing? Do you stop doing normal things?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I will have to, like, plan my breaths very specifically on the fly to where I can get some air in there, because I think, yeah, you become so focused on the vocal quality. You know, if I'm doing something like, I'll do a lot of like insane type characters and stuff. And I would oftentimes, you know, go into more of a Joker voice in the booth. And when I'm doing the Joker, it suddenly will, I'm like, okay, I gotta stop and breathe. Okay.
It's funny, right? It's because you're so concentrated on just making it kind of sound and keeping it in that range, and you're doing whatever it takes. And sometimes it's just without even thinking this is happening. And I didn't even realize that that was happening until, like, you know, I'm sitting next to Fred and he's like, you know, and I'm like, and especially with Yosemite Sam, because Yosemite, there's never a moment, even when he's whispering, that he doesn't sound like he's firing on all cylinders.
Like Bugs, at least, you know, he can get a little coy.
But again, even that, you know, there's things that happen with your physicality. Like you're laughing at the Paul Giamatti stuff. It's like you have to do things to kind of get into that level. And, you know, that's just one aspect of getting into character. And then again, you're having to read stuff that no one's ever read, not even Mel. And what the best part about Looney Tunes cartoons is the animators and what they're doing is that they are hearkening back to old jokes or situations or familiar things that me as a nerd, and even if you're watching as a fan, you will automatically dial into a musicality or a memory or something that has happened before, or, you know, that is leading into something that is memorable, but then it is a curveball.
Yeah.
And that also helps as a performer to kind of, like, again, get it in that comfortable zone. But then they're like, yeah, there are moments where you have to kind of break the mold and you have to do something different with it. And that only comes, I guess, with years and years and years of just experience and being okay with failing and being okay with, like, oh, well, that didn't work. Can I go back and do it again? And of course, you're in a safe zone.
That's a huge point right there. And you mentioned that with Mel, that some of the funniest stuff with Mel is when he's kind of losing the voice, when he's kind of going out of control of that. That fearlessness lends so much to, you know, doing a performance beyond just the impression. One of the funniest things I heard several years ago was Rob Paulsen, when he was doing his podcast, Talking Tunes. He, for some insane reason, I can't imagine why he thought this was a good idea, but he decided to do an episode where I think he was, like, reading emails or something, but he decided to do the entire episode doing the voice of Carl Weezer. and Carl Weezer's a very high voice. It's very up here. And it's like, you could tell 20 minutes in, Rob is completely losing this voice. He cannot hold on to this voice to save his life. And
he created,
you could tell that
voice.
It was still Carl because of the character that he's driving into it, not just the vocal quality. And he's calling it out. He's calling out that he's failing. He's calling it out in character. And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I feel like being able to bring that to a performance gives you both another layer, but also a lot more flexibility and a lot more places you can go.
Right. And again, like, they just dropped the new batch, fourth season of Looney Tunes cartoons on HBO Max. I was watching some of it and I was like, okay, I think these are the ones where I'm finally starting to feel like four seasons in, or four, you know, I don't even know even where these episodes, like, are in chronological order or not of how they were recorded or how they were produced. But I think, especially in this round, and especially for Bugs, you know, versus that very first 10 episode drop that we did, like, you know, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, to where it is now, like, you could hear how comfortable, like, at least I can, and I feel like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit more confident and a lot more comfortable with these characters. For whatever reason, Daffy, for me, is, I always equate him to a
Richard Dreyfuss with a lisp. Okay. For me, and of course, it's a little heightened, but Daffy is Richard Dreyfuss. Miss Mayor Vaughn, what we're dealing with here is a perfect eating machine. And all
that
this machine wants to do is swim around, eat, and make little baby sharks.
You know, like, you know, it's, again, it's that weird thing of, like, what does it kind of sound like? I didn't know, and I think you'll find this as well, like, auditioning for things, that you'll often not even know that you could do things until you're asked to do them.
Oh, absolutely.
There are just some things, like, I never, you know, as a voiceover artist, everyone's running for gunning for the prize, Bugs Bunny. You know, everyone wants to read for Bugs Bunny, or they want to do a great Bugs Bunny impression. And when they were doing casting for Looney Tunes show, where I got to play Marvin the Martian, Jeff came back to play pretty much like a lion's share of the characters, and you know, Bob respectfully as Porky. You know, Colette was like, hey, can you do Daffy? And I was like, no one's ever asked me that question in my entire life, and not even myself. So I started watching it. And at the time, I was living at a friend's house. And one of our neighbors just happened to be animator Bill Kopp, who was the creator of Eek the Cat.
Yeah, yeah, great guy.
And he would just show up at our house randomly, like thinking there was a party or something. We would just watch cartoons. And
yeah, he worked with Spumco. He was on Ren and Stimpy. A lot of good stuff.
So I just started doing like a kind of like my Daffy impression. And he was like, Daffy, Sylvester, I think, is his favorite Looney Tunes character. But he was like, Daffy is like, he's like, oh my God. Like, he was really instrumental in encouraging me to keep trying to nail Daffy. Only, and I just like making people laugh, much like yourself, as a comedian. And the more I did it, the more he would laugh. And I would think I was doing it better every time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first time I ever did Daffy was for the Teen Titans. It was Teen Titans Go to the Movies. They had animated the new Warner Brothers logo, yep, where Daffy is...
bounces around the woohoo. Woo-hoo, yeah.
Woo-hoo. I mean, I don't even do the voice in that, but like, it was enough... They still auditioned me to see if I could do the voice, but I remember being in that booth going, oh my God, like, this is the craziest, really, I had already been voicing Marvin. I'm thankful to be Marvin as long as I have.
I love Marvin, Earth Creature. Isn't that lovely?
Like, I love Marvin. He's my favorite Looney Tunes character, but like, to be doing those, you know, Daffy Duck anything, I was just like, oh my God, like, my mind was blown.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love that you mentioned that, you know, oftentimes we don't know if we can do these voices until we're suddenly asked. That is one of the things that I love seeing about auditions come through, where they're like, we're looking for a sound alike for this or something like that, that you'd never really think of it until it's in front of you, or you'll stumble across something. I think that that's something a lot of voice actors do, where just in our average day, walking around, we'll stumble across something and be like, I wonder if I can do that. You know, I was watching a Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus yesterday, and I was like,
I love it.
I wonder if I could pull that off. I've got a funny idea for a video, you know,
sure,
that kind of thing, you know, going into Boba Fett. Or I had an audition come through a while ago that was like, you know, can you do Gary Owens?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's give it a try and see if we can find it. And
the best part, like, too, is that right away, you've already created like an original character, whether it's like 99.9% Gary, or now you have this, your own Ken Pringle announcer, like a Don Pardo, you know, you know, Mike Myers, Adam Sandler, you know, like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
You have now the timing of this character, or this, your own personal announcer, that you could use in your demo or on a show when you get cast, because, you know, how it is. It's like you're in the booth for a character, and the casting or the voice director just goes, hey, we're going to, can you fill in these three characters for us? You know, like,
oh, sure.
You got to be able to switch on a dime.
But, yeah, sure. I had one where they were like, yeah, we just need this background voice. They're like, we want this to be a little more like old sort of radio. And I'm like, old radio, like how old? They're like, well, you know, not old, but they're, you know, 70s, 80s. And so, of course, I'm naturally going to try to find a Casey Kasem kind of a voice. And here we go, Dawn with the Countdown. You know, it's these influences that you're like, I don't know if I can do it, but what the hell? Throw it out there and see what you get.
And again, nothing will, you know, sustain your career in voiceover longer than originality. People, you know, that's always a battle that I always had with like making a demo reel, was like, how many impressions should I put? And then the note that I was told from everyone was like, hardly any. Like, if there are some really, really good ones, yes. Yeah. Stuff that'll make people laugh when they hear it, sure. But it shouldn't just be like a 90% like impression demo reel, unless you have that on your site and that's a specialty and you have these crazy impressions. Showcase them, sure. But in a general voiceover animation reel, they want to hear people and hire people that can create things. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you look at a career like, you know, like mine, where it's like, okay, I got like a lot of voice matches on there, which is awesome. Cause guess what? People love reboots. People love people love nostalgia. No matter what they say, they're going to keep rebooting the shit out of everything. But then you look at a career like Billy West or a Tom Kenny, and it's like, yeah, dude, like that's the dream, right? Is like,
all this amazing original stuff.
To create. Like, I often tell Billy, I'm like, you know, people call you modern day Mel Blanc because you have done Mel Blanc characters. But for me, Billy West is a modern day Mel Blanc in a sense that he has created his own batch of, like, iconic sounds. Like, every, like, the cast of Futurama is like 90% Billy.
And, oh, sure.
And it's amazing.
And you'll see a lot of auditions come through now where they're like, yeah, we're looking more sort of like a Fry type. And it's like, yeah, the fact that you're able to go out there and create an archetype, really,
create a
reference.
They're
going to try to find. That's amazing.
Yeah. So,
you know, there's plenty of things out there that will look for, you know, a John DiMaggio type or something like that. And that's, it's incredible.
I've only had that come in once where I saw an Eric Bauza type. I'm like, what the hell does that even mean? We're looking for a Filipino Canadian. It's like, what? Well,
to be fair, I feel like the best way I could ever describe your career is that among a lot of my voiceover friends, your name has sort of become a running joke in that if a role comes through or like it's rebooting a classic character or something, it's like, why even audition for it? Oh. They're just going to give it to Bauza.
Yeah.
It's like, just give it to Bauza has become like a catchphrase.
No, there's
just, it means, you know, catch all. That's where it's going to go.
I'm thankful for that kind of response, but at the same time, there are, for me, I'm like, I want to live in a sea of Bugs Bunnies. I want there to be 50 of us that carry around this little card that is like the secret Bugs Bunny society. Because
you and Jeff Bergman have a handshake or something.
Yeah, you know, again, it's like, for me, it's like, I didn't create the character. I want people to experience what I've had a chance to have, and I'm not greedy. I'm not like, you know, I'll work. We'll all work. I always say there's plenty of room. There's plenty of room at the pond for everyone to dip their heads in and drink. And I feel like, you know, especially with these characters, anytime like someone contacts me and is like, oh, I saw this audition come through. Is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, everything's fine because I didn't create these characters. And they're like, should I read for it? I'm like, hell yeah. Like, don't, you have to keep lights on in your house the same way I do. And don't stop or hinder yourself from having a golden opportunity like this. Like, the email goes out to everyone. So everyone should read it.
Right, right.
You have that in an audio recording now. So it's like, Bauza said I could read for it. And I'm like, yes, because I don't have, I'm not the gatekeeper, you know.
I think secretly you just want to know that you can beat them down by yourself with your own audio. It's vocal kumite, man.
Please, please read for it. I dare you. I love seeing, you know, people book these things that are like, yeah, like dude or dudette, go for it. You know,
it is one of the best parts of the business is, you know, you see a role and it's like, oh, I didn't get that. But then you see who got it. It's like, oh, no, that was good choice. That's awesome. I'm so glad they got that.
I will tell you. And as you know, in this career, it's like the moment you're like, gah, I can't crack the code. But then you immediately turn back to the casting director or whoever is auditioning you and go, but I'll tell you who can. You should audition this person, him, her, and him. You know, it's like, get them in there, let them try it. And if they book it, I could say I told you so, because they're the ones that should be in here, not me. You know.
And then speaking of, you know, people getting out there and getting an opportunity and more people coming into this, one of the things I want to mention that I think is neat is, you know, you named some names earlier. There's only been a few actors that have voiced Bugs Bunny beyond Mel Blanc. Of those actors, you are the first actor of Filipino descent to play a lot of these characters, even though you're playing characters where the audience at home is not necessarily going, oh, look, Bugs Bunny's Filipino now. You know, even though you're bringing that same voice to it, how important do you think that level of representation is, and sort of that you're sort of breaking new barriers here?
Well, it is funny, and it's interesting to see voiceover kind of come into that scope of representation and how important it is nowadays, and how important it is to have the right people behind the camera as well as the microphone now. You know, I think it's funny because in voiceover, this never really mattered, right? Like the idea of like stepping behind a microphone and be able to create a character that maybe, you know, if you even look at someone like Dee Bradley Baker, shouldn't even be coming out of a human, You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, I hope D doesn't get canceled for not being an actual cow, you know, like, because he can do a great cow or a frog or a dog for that matter. I hope I don't get canceled for not being an actual rabbit. But it's funny because it's like with iconic characters, for me, it's always just been, does it sound like the character? Because I don't care right. who is behind the microphone as long as it sounds like the character.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to a case of like something like Family Guy and Cleveland Brown, you know, Mike Henry willfully stepping down from voicing that character because he's not of actual African-American descent is pretty important and shows like, wow, like, you know, that's very thoughtful and very, you know, like, he's still on the show, obviously, as right. other characters, but he consciously was like, well, this doesn't feel right, and right. someone else should be doing it. Well, and the, but here's the question now therein, is that, is it okay now that they have, you know, Arif, who's an excellent impressionist, does tons of impressions, is it okay now that he's doing an impression of what the Caucasian guy was doing? Like, does that correct the situation? I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's not my question to answer, but it is definitely still like, okay. And it's because when I hear Cleveland, I don't hear a stereotypical like black character. I don't hear right. like what the equivalent of, you know, brown face or black face would be, black voice. It's not like Mike Henry was doing like, you know, a racist interpretation of a character. It sounded like he was impersonating someone that he actually met. It right. sounded like an actual guy that just so happened to have this unique kind of voice, you know,
yeah.
that wasn't a stereotypical voice. So it is definitely up for debate still. But for me and Bugs Bunny, it's like if a Filipino kid happens to notice that I'm voicing this character and yeah. it kind of inspires them to kind of pursue a career in voiceover. Awesome. Or it doesn't even have to be a Filipino kid. If it's just a kid or a person, you know, a guy, girl, adult, young or old, that is just shy to use their own voice. If it's something that you're hearing me speak now and going, oh my God, like this is just a normal, regular, somewhat regular guy that has an abundance of cartoon hoodies in his closet. If it inspires you to have a voice at all where you didn't have a voice before, that's, you know, for me, that's the jackpot, right? It's like, I love to inspire and I love to educate and have conversations like this with people that are on the same page, you know, that mm-hmm. do get it. You get it. And I know the people that are listening to this get it. When I first moved here in like 2004, 2005, there was nothing like this. There were no podcasts. There was no easy access of information. It was the voiceover resource guide. And it was flipping to the back of that magazine going, who has voiceover classes? Are they reputable? But now it's like, now that I'm in this position where I get a random email, a random direct message on either Twitter or Instagram asking me about voiceover, I stop what I'm doing and I go, I'm going to type, I'm going to let them know, you know, I'm going to give them the information that I wish I had access to when I was starting.
Mm-hmm. Which would you say is the more important message that you would like your career to represent? Is it that, you know, this is the kind of career that young Filipino kids could aspire to, or is it breaking the stereotype and showing that Canadians are actually funny?
That's funny. I'm going to go with that one. I feel like, you know, we're the silent watchers, you know, we just observe and we're like, oh, what are they doing down there? Can we have Canadian American Idol? You know, like it's basically Canadian Idol. It's like we've had.
You're never going to get a Canadian Simon Cowell. I can tell you that.
It's, yeah.
It's going to be a very long, polite period before somebody finally gets booted from the show, followed by 20 minutes of apologies.
Oh, man. Mike Myers, I think his joke was like, Canadian version of a Mexican standoff is two Canadian guys trying to go through a door at the same time going, after you, eh? No, after you. After you. After you. It's like no one ever goes through the door because they're just too polite. Yo, I mean, Canadians, boy, oh boy. That's a whole other podcast. Yeah. I think inspiration-wise, for you know, that all cultures can attain their dream. Anyone can, if you have a passion for anything, it doesn't have to be voiceover. You could be, if you want to change oil at Easy Lube, or, you know, if that's your dream, then go after it. Because if you don't, you will live a lifetime of questioning what if, you know, and that's tough. That's a hard life. You know, at least if you tried, you might even find out that it wasn't for you. You might even find out that you're like, eh, back to plumbing school, I guess, you know, like maybe that was my calling. I don't know. But at least you will have tried, and you'll know. But if you do try and you do like it and it gets better and better every time, you're going to be like, yes, I'm so happy that I did that.
Listen, this has been a lot of fun. Before I let you go, one of the things we do on this podcast every episode is I always like to play games with my guests. Would you be up for a game?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to email a script to you because we are going to play a little game called Cold Reads. So the way this game works is I have just emailed a script to you that you have never seen. You've never seen this before. I am going to have you read this script in character voices that you are well known for. Now, it can be literally anything. The only thing I promise is that it won't be anything offensive because we do try to keep this family friendly, but it can be literally anything. In prior episodes, we've had Carlos Alazraki as Mike Wazowski doing children's book reviews. I've had Chris Edgerly as Pathfinder from Apex Legend performing The Fault in Our Stars. We had Josh Robert Thompson as Morgan Freeman selling chinchillas on Craigslist. All sorts of crazy stuff. I have a little something special for you.
Yes.
One of my favorite memories as a kid about the Looney Tunes characters is that every year in school, around February, I would get Valentine's Day cards
with the
Looney Tunes characters on them. So I will encourage you to switch up the voices to whatever characters you want, Looney Tunes or otherwise, as often as you want. This will be the Looney Tunes and all of the other voices from Eric Bauza's VO Menagerie performing the world's greatest pickup lines.
Here we go. These are the pickup lines or Valentine's Day quotes.
Valentine's Day cards. Excellent.
The cards and the quotes that you would find in the middle school or grade school. I love that you brought that up because actually, RetroKid, we're looking to design some old school Valentine cards available this February. I think raccoons will be part of that collection.
Oh nice.
So it's modern old school Valentine's Day cards.
Now the question for you is, if you're doing the old school Valentine's cards, are they where it's like the four to a sheet with the perforated edges and you got to tear them apart?
I think so. I think so. We're going to try. We're going to try our hardest.
I love it.
But here are some pickup lines or Valentine's Day quotes in some various classic cartoon characters that you might remember from this era. So,
yes, you did bring up Looney Tunes, yes? So I will start with the most romantic of all, the Pepe Le Pew, the French skunk, oui? Do you believe in love at first sight, or should I walk by again?
Baby, you're an earthquake. Because you just rocked my world. It's a good thing I have my library card, because I am totally checking you out. Woo-hoo!
Girl, if you were words on a page, you'd be fine print.
Ooh, do you know CPR? Because you just took my breath away.
Oh boy, these are great.
I was blinded by your beauty. I'm going to need your name and phone number for insurance purposes.
On a scale of 1 to America, how free are you tonight?
That's a good one.
Hey, rabbit, feel my shirt. Know what it's made of? Boyfriend material.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll switch up. We'll do this is a pretty funny one.
Oh, they get worse, yeah.
Yeah. Let's do a little bit of Fozzie Bear. Let's see what
Love
Fozzie...
My name's Microsoft. Can I crash at your place tonight? Is your last name Campbell? Because you look good. Waka waka.
Bunsen Honeydew.
Do you have a Band-Aid? I just scraped my knee falling for you. Ooh, we should invent a cure for that. Do you work for Spotify? Because you're clearly this week's hottest single.
Say, is your name Google? Because you've got everything I've been searching for.
If you were a Transformer, you'd be Optimus Fine. Transform and roll out.
Bring it home. One more.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ha, ha. You're like a phaser on Star Trek. Set to stunning. Oh, my. You had to get George Takei.
Oh, that was fantastic, buddy. I love it.
Oh, man. Well, you are so much fun and are a professional comedian, and you know how hard it is in an open mic to get other comedians laugh at your material. And to hear you laughing is, for me, very rewarding. So thank you. And you work with the best. You've seen them all. So thank you again, Ken.
Thank you, man. For having thank me on you. Here. Of course. It's been an absolute treat. And for those of you listening at home, do go check out RetroKid because it's a Canadian website. It's RetroKid, RetroKid.ca, but they do ship to the U.S. Good to know. Thank you, Eric. It's been a real pleasure. And I'm going to close this out the same way I close out every episode of the podcast with the words my mom would say every week when the cartoons on Saturday morning had wrapped up. The show's over. Go outside and play.
Yeah, the other, that's all, Ken.